Welcome to Modcast, a civilization podcast focused on modding, with co-hosts Peter Maniac Steinbeck.
Good day, Earthlings.
Thalassicus.
Now you have to say something.
Hello.
It's our first time, so...
Hi, everyone.
And myself, Jacob Zeanwolf Turner. Today we are joined with Jorge Chorsi Saralegu, and I told you I'd butcher that.
That's fine. A Chorsi, and I'm here.
Chorsi.
Yeah.
And Opera.
Hello, everyone.
Good. As you can see, dear listeners, we are all a new crew, except for me. Garrett, Zaka, and Lucudus, and of course also Impaler, that was his name, yeah, have decided to quit Modcast. And so after some searching, Dan Q and I have found a new team. For our first Modcast, I thought we could continue our old tradition of self-promotion. So, I don't know, Thalassicus, do you have something worthy of Sif to talk about?
Sure. Okay, well, my approach, my general concept that I like going for in strategy games like Civilization is Blizzard Entertainment says, with everything that they do, is this fun? And that's something that's a really important goal. If something isn't fun, if it's just annoying or frustrating or whatever, it should probably be left out of the game or replaced with something better. And Sid Meier says that a game is a series of interesting decisions. And so we want to make sure that the strategic decision-making from one step of the game to the next is interesting and it's fun to follow. So,
and that's why you have decided to make a mod, Thalassicus Balanced Mods.
Yes. Well, someone else want to go on ahead?
Jacob, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I suppose we can go through and introduce ourselves as the first official episode with us.
You know me on the forums for Zeanwolf, and I mostly mod in Fall from Heaven, and then I branched out from there and started trying to help Civ 4 people with making their own mods better and pushing very heavily to quit using Python and start doing everything they can in the DLL. Yeah, I got a lot of people to make the move over, and many of them now admit that, yeah, C++ is actually easier than Python. It's just compile stuff at the end. And a lot of the people that I started teaching and, you know, showed them the basic how to actually open the SDK are now the people that are big names on the community teaching everyone else. So I'm really happy about that, since it meant me taking a break from Civ to focus on school didn't really abandon the community or anything like that. I love fantasy modding, and mostly everything I do with modding is to push myself with writing code. So it's very good that I have a team that I work with so that they can actually make it playable, because what I do probably tends not to be very fun.
You were also planning to make a fantasy mod for Civ 5 once the DLL is out. Can you already reveal something about that?
I'm just a code writer for the section of code we don't have released yet, so I haven't done much. So I would say I don't have permission from the actual mod leader to say too much about it yet. It's just, it's a fantasy mod that needs to have the DLL because they've got some really interesting twists planned with it.
I thought you were the leader.
No, as I said, mostly I just look at the code and go, hey, I could do this. And I make things get very convoluted very fast, so I need the other people there to kind of rein me in.
Okay. Was Opera on your team as well? Or am I mistaken about that?
Yeah, Opera is part of it. Basically, everybody that had worked on Fall Further and the people who worked on mods from that are part of it, whether officially or not.
So, Opera, you are also looking forward to more Civ 5 modding once the DLL is out?
Yeah, of course. I have no idea when that will happen, though.
Yeah, it could be a while, of course. If it isn't released soon, you might run out of topics to discuss here. Guys, Frankensteiners, you have to urge Firaxis to release the DLL very soon.
Well, we've still got the NDA over us, so all we can really say is soon, and it was 6 months for the Civ 4 DLL. I don't know how long it's been since Civ 5 came out, but...
About a year.
Oh, okay.
They've been saying soon for a couple of months, of course, so
Well, it is a very hopeful soon. So, the guy who's in charge of the DLL for Firaxis is a really great guy, and he's doing everything he can to get it through to us. And make
Sean,
it very
is
quick.
That Sean, is that Sean Seckman?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. The more he focuses, So perhaps the lack of focus on the modding tools means he's focusing on the DLL. So perhaps that's a good sign.
Yeah, he seems very busy in general. Can't say much more. Sorry.
Yeah, that's a problem, of course. Also with the old team, I was the only one, I think, without access to Frankenstein. So sometimes my co-hosts had to say, no comment, no comments.
Something else that would be helpful for modding in the future that hopefully will come out once DLL access is available is there's a dependency section in the mod buddy that allows you to say, okay, my mod uses stuff from this other mod, and so you need to have the other person's mod installed in order to also use mine. And that'd be sort of helpful because it'd let people create libraries that other people can use of useful information. So hopefully that's will also come out eventually. It'd be useful, but of course it's not as important as the C++ access.
I'm not sure I understood you well.
I could rephrase it.
Don't you already have something like that? We can already indicate if you want to, if our mod is compatible or incompatible with others.
We can say that in the mod description, but there's nothing in Civ that actually enforces it. So if you say this mod needs another mod and people don't notice that and they try and use it, then they'll say, oh, it isn't working and such. Whereas the dependencies part of the mod browser would actually tell the user, hey, you also need to go get this other thing to work this one.
Okay, that's very handy. It could also be used to enforce the user to release a patch on the main release, yes?
Yes. And another useful purpose of it is that you can also do exclusions. Like, if you're using this mod, you can't use this other mod because they do basically the same thing and it wouldn't work well together. So you can say, okay, well, if you have this mod installed, you shouldn't have B, C, or D installed because it caused problems. So it's a bunch of useful stuff. Hopefully we'll have one day, but not absolutely necessary.
Okay, well, a lot of the forum posts are, of course, because is this mod compatible or not compatible? So it would solve a lot of problems.
Exactly.
And remove lots of forum posts. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, actually, who of you know how to code C++?
Yes.
You do? Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's actually my area of focus.
Is it your education, or have you learned it by yourself?
I started learning C++ from an early age and also in education, because when I was in college, they were still teaching primarily C++. Java was relatively recent, so they hadn't transitioned to Java yet. I learned that one later.
Before Civ 5, I had never heard of you before, so and now suddenly you command the scene and make the biggest mods. So I don't know, are you a recent convert to Civ, or have I just been hiding under a rock?
I've been a Civ player for all my life, but I've never been active in modding here because there's always been, other groups who are leading the main mods, and so there was never really any reason to get involved. I was mostly involved with SimCity, SimCity 4. I did some balance mods for that. I also made a dungeon crawl map for Warcraft 3. So that's what I've been involved in my free time over the past few years.
Yeah, that's true, that point you make, because other teams are already making a big mod, so I don't need to. Yeah, that's kind of a bit my feeling with Civ 5. I think the base game is much better than Civ 4's base game. I feel much less need to start modding myself. So I have to admit, despite being on Modcast, my modding experience with Civ 5 is very, very low.
Still, the skills that you learn modding one game do apply to other areas. So even if you haven't done much modding with Civ 5 specifically, the general concepts that you've learned from modding Civ 4 are still pretty much the same.
Yeah, that's true. I hope that once the DLL comes out, my acquired skills will become much more useful.
Opera, why don't you say something?
Well, I know C++ myself too. I learned it Only with C4. So I don't know if I could use it outside of C4.
So what is your background in gaming? What's been your interest in the past?
Mostly I'm not a strategy gamer at all. I usually play RPGs. And one day, I don't remember how exactly, I discovered C4, and in time I discovered Soulframe Even, and from there I started modding, mostly with the help of Eugene Wolf and Valkyrian, who isn't here today.
Yeah, we need to invite that guy too someday.
He's very busy doing stuff.
Doing stuff? Ooh. Oh, perhaps it's Firaxis. Who knows? He has been hired. Telescus, wouldn't you want to be hired by Firaxis?
Oh, it'd be fantastic, but you know, you never know how things will end up. Actually, I'm actually looking towards the direction of BioWare right now because they're in my same state, so it'd be a convenient employment position.
Great, then you'll make Mass Effect 3 for me. That's also one of my favorite games.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and hopefully the Star Wars The Old Republic game, because MMOs always need a large group of people on the job, so who knows? We'll find out.
Yeah, I don't know how frequent it will be for companies to recruit from people who get their fame in Civilization. I gotta say, it's probably the best place to take your pool from if you're looking for game players, since in Civ, people tend to learn how to code, they learn decent coding practices, and the best thing is, while I was taking a break from Civ, I went and played a lot of other games, and I tried to get in on their community. Holy cow. Nobody out there believes that a community like Civilization has is capable of existing on the internet. And they all say, well, that's how it has to be on the internet. And I'm like, well, you know, over at Civ, you know what? I don't want to tell you where it's better, because you'll go there.
Actually, there is one other community I found that's really good in that regard, and that's the SimCity community, though it's somewhat faded because there haven't been any SimCity games in the past few years. But that community was also, you know, the same sort of game, a strategy game where you build stuff. And that tended to have a really good community on Simtropolis. It was always very nice and friendly. Overall, trying to work together instead of just, you know, having flame wars all the time.
Guys, have you never visited CFC's off-topic forum?
Well, at least you can choose not to go there.
Yeah, you should choose to.
Okay, well, I don't know. Personally, my experience is that every forum thinks of itself that it's better than the other, so...
True.
Except for the StarCraft 2 forum, I don't know. All the forums I visit are pretty okay, I have to say. So I guess I'm just lucky.
Well, I still don't know how to pronounce your screen name. Chers? Chers?
Yeah, Churche? That's fine. Yeah.
Churche?
Yeah.
Churche? Okay.
And my father told me that okay. That was my name in Basque, and I found out, like, years
really?
After he died. Well, he said it was, and so I've always used it. And then sometime, online, I thought, hey, let me look up my name in Basque, and he made it up. It wasn't. It was something else.
Still an interesting name.
Yeah, it is.
Basque is just a very rare language because it's a very unique. It's not connected to any part of the other Indo-Pyrian languages. But anyway, I'm rambling. Yeah. What's your background in gaming and modding?
In gaming, I played only on Macs until actually Civ 5. So I played, I played a game called Balance of Power and then another one called Patton versus Rommel. And those were the only two that I ever played until I started playing Civ 2. And then since then I've only played Civ. So that's it. And I have done, in fact, the only quote modding I've done is back in Civ 2. I created a bunch of Basque city names. Okay. For my Civ. That's it. That's the sum total of it. I'm a total, player only.
Mm-hmm. There is more to it than just playing, because when you're playing someone's mod and giving feedback, you're a tester, and testing is a very vital part of any development team.
That's true, because the developers themselves, they don't play their own game.
Right.
Developers also have a biased viewpoint because they know all the internals, and it's very easy to get caught up in little details and overlook the big picture. And so someone who's less familiar with the details can often provide a different perspective that's very useful.
That's what I try to do. I mean, knowing that I can't provide anything else anyway, it makes the choice pretty simple. But yeah, I try to stay on my gaming experience and as you said, like what's fun and what's interesting, and just focus on that.
So other than Civ, your experience was in war games?
Yeah, war games. So
Patton versus Rommel. My father's a history buff, and so.
And actually, I still play Diplomacy, although that's not an online thing. That's a PBM thing.
Still fun.
Yeah.
Pencil, you can pay by mail?
Tabletop games.
Yeah, well, now I play on, I play by email. There's a pretty big email Diplomacy community. I used to play as a board game when I was a kid, but I don't even know anybody now, in real life who plays it, or anybody who lives here in town.
And it probably takes a few hours to finish in real life.
Oh, yeah, it would. It takes over a year sometimes with some of the big games online.
So coming from that community, how did you and others that you know from there receive the last Firaxis patch where it sort of became possible to start doing the play by email again with Civ 5?
I haven't played it by email. I've actually never played any multiplayer. I've only played single player.
Gotcha.
I play Diplomacy by email.
But there's also this bug in the recent patch that everyone can see the resources discovered by another. So that's why we were planning to start a multiplayer game in a replay Civ, but we canceled our plans because of that.
Yeah, a bit of a bug.
Slightly. Well, I've always been mainly a single-player Civ player, too. When I do multiplayer, it's usually with something like Battlefield 2 or StarCraft 2 or something like that that's relatively fast-paced. With Civ, I like taking my time, thinking things through, strategizing and all that, which is somewhat difficult when you're in a simultaneous multiplayer environment for a turn-based game.
Same for me.
Galasicus, how about we start talking about your mods?
Sure. The work I've done basically comes in two parts. The first is the unofficial patch, which focuses on improving the user interface with minimal gameplay impact. One example of this is I added little icons of the promotions that units have over the unit flags so that you can see them directly on the main map without having to memorize which units have which promotions and clicking back and forth between them and having to scan enemy units with another unit just to figure out who you can attack. This was based on work by Arendir, Zinewolf, and Kale that I then expanded, added more code, created some additional artwork for really tiny icons, and then added to the patch. Another major part of Civip I did is automatic tooltips. The building tooltips are created directly from game data so that there's no chance of mistakes in the tooltip. And it just makes it so much easier to mod because you can change data for the buildings and the changes are automatically reflected in-game without having to go and update all the tooltips. It also makes it easier for doing language translations. Because once you have the basic parts of the tooltips translated, you can use those for any buildings and any combinations, and it'll combine them appropriately for different languages. Makes it much easier. Those are the main things I did in the unofficial patch. There's also some behind-the-scenes stuff that ties in with other things, but that's mainly what shows up. The other part of the unofficial patch is all sorts of useful tools for the user interface from all sorts of various authors that are tied together, because some parts of modding require that you merge the changes in Civilization V. That involves anything that deals with the Lua code. So it's necessary to take, part of one person's mod that alters a file, part of another person's mod, and put them together. It's not really a problem. It's just that the way programming works, you have to have compatibility. And with data edits, you can use bits and pieces from various different mods. But with the actual Lua code, it's necessary to manually merge the files, so that's what I did with the unofficial patch. Most of my work, though, has been done enhancing the game in ways that make our decisions more challenging and interesting. So, for example, I added localized resource bonuses to the granary, which was eventually added to vanilla because it means that the value of the granary changes from one city to another depending on what's around it, and so it adds variety to the game and variety to our strategies depending on the circumstances. And sometimes it involves making decisions closer to each other in value, and sometimes it involves also pushing them apart. Like, for example, what Firaxis recently did with the Hanging Gardens. That was a very interesting change that they made, because it makes the Hanging Gardens useful for a very unique and interesting role. Both the Pyramids and Hanging Gardens used to be sort of useful for an expansive empire, and now the Hanging Gardens has a role that is very distinctly different from the Pyramids. So that's part of it, and another part is also ensuring that everything in the game has at least a use for some strategy. There's generally been a feeling lately that some wonders like Angkor Wat or some units like, say, the Ironclad aren't particularly valuable, and if we don't ever use them in any major strategies, then what's the point of them being even, what's the point of them even being around in the game? I mean, you want them to be interesting and exciting and fun to use, so I sometimes take some of the stuff that's not as good like that and buff it up to make it more exciting.
Ooh, what was that? What was
Peter?
That sound?
Sorry,
yes,
that was me.
That was Peter? A fun sound. Yes.
Did you have anything in mind in particular you wanted to talk or ask about?
So, of course, I'm rather technical, a mathematical model in a sense, but perhaps that's also the basis when you start to design a model from scratch. So, one thing I was wondering, in vanilla Civ 5, a mine produces the same yield as a village, what is it called? Trading post?
Trading post or village.
Okay, yeah. So, one hammer, one gold, and also, engineers and merchants, they produce two of each, two hammers, two gold. In your mod, it's more like, one hammer is worth, equals two gold. Is that a conscious decision, or why did you make it?
Basically, in vanilla, I don't feel that the value of one point of production is exactly equal to the value of one point of gold. It seems like that production is generally more valuable, so I increase the value of trading posts back to their original two gold in order to make both improvements viable to go for, depending on what sort of economy you're planning on. It's very difficult to do, because when you're talking about one unit of one resource and one unit of another resource, you're reaching such small numbers that it's indivisible, and it's very difficult to get to fine-tune it up and down. For example, the user interface itself only can support 1 gold or 2 gold. It can't do 1.5 gold or 0.75 hammers. That's actually a reason why in the past I considered scaling all resources up. It'd give people more of a chance to be flexible in the amounts, like saying 5 of this is worth 4 of that or 6 of that. So instead of trying to balance it out perfectly on a 1 food equals 1 gold equals 1 production, which I found was very difficult to do because of these low numbers, I decided to balance it to 1 food is 2 gold equals 2 production. And other things are also scaled. For example, units cost a lot more to maintain and so on. So basically, the economy factor is scaled up by a factor of about 2. It's just easier to work with larger numbers.
Oh, yes, that's very good. Because I think when you design mod, you have to first make a basic that equals that, and then you have to design strategies which allow you to get a better exchange rate. That's basically the economy of Civ, to turn one resource efficiently into another.
Yeah. Some other basic things. One concept that I've tried to incorporate into the mod is automatic difficulty adjustment. One of the problems I've always had with Civ games, Civ 5, Civ 4, all the way back to Civ 2, is runaway games, where towards the end of the game, you reach a point where you know you've won. I mean, it's just not difficult anymore. Mm-hmm. You cross a threshold when you know, okay, after this point, it's just playing it out to the end. And I've never really found that too enjoyable, because then you just start going through the motions, and it's not really all that exciting or challenging. So what I try and do in the mod is some automatic difficulty adjustment. One example of this is research agreements. The system of research agreements I use in the mod is it takes the research of both players in the agreement, combines it. So like say if one person has 100 beakers per turn, another has 200 beakers per turn, combine that to 300, and then distribute a percentage of that equally to both players. What this ends up doing is the person who's further behind gets a bonus, and the person who's ahead doesn't get as much. And so people in the game who start running away with the game, and it's becoming too easy for them, they start getting less and less bonus from things like this. And people who are falling behind get somewhat more of a bonus. It's not enough to completely counteract it. Like, it wouldn't make sense if you would intentionally fall behind to get a bonus. That wouldn't make sense. So it's somewhat of a middle ground between those two, where the runaway game or the complete counteraction, and it automatically balances the difficulty on its own.
Yes, that's a very good point. I've also often wondered about how to make sure the game doesn't get boring in the end. One way I've thought about doing is allowing you to already reach a victory, you know, in the middle of the tech tree. I think Civ 5 is a good move in that direction, because for instance, Conquest Victory, you don't have to conquer everyone, you just have to conquer their capital. And Diplomacy Victory, many people say that it's too easy, but I think that's exactly a well-designed victory, because when you're swimming in gold, it's a sign that you'll probably be able to win anyway. So yeah, in that case, I think Civ 5 has some good ideas in that field.
Something else I did to try and balance that out is, there's one policy that's a really good example. It's the policy in the honor tree in vanilla that gives a percentage bonus to all experience gained. I don't really like that policy. And the reason why is because it doesn't really help a player who's just started out conquering, who needs the bonus more because they haven't gained much experience yet. But once you've been conquering for a long time and you're starting to steamroll players because you have high experience, you start getting even more experience. So your experience just goes up faster and faster towards the end of the game, and you have that runaway game scenario. So what I prefer to do instead is, later in the autocracy tree, I added a plus 15 experience to units. And that was eventually incorporated into vanilla. And I like that better than the percentage bonus, because it's a fixed amount that will apply evenly throughout the game, and it doesn't amplify and accelerate as you go on. So that's another example of, I like to keep the game relatively steady so that it's always hopefully an even challenge from the start to the end.
That's actually a lot of what you've done. There are other examples, like recently you're balancing the resources so that that's probably the biggest difference between vanilla and your mod is how easy or hard it is to get stone or horses, say, for example, or coal. You've distributed it so that it's not always the same, but everybody has roughly access to it. Whereas in vanilla, somebody can have 6 iron or they can have 0 iron. First of all, okay, with a more balanced army where you have resourceless units and then a few elite resource-based units, but also there's no runaway guy who has a long swordsman rush with, 8 long swordsmen.
Right. Basically, with that, what I wanted to do is sort of a middle ground. In vanilla, you might start off with no iron at all, in which case you're basically I mean, you can still sort of struggle along without any iron, but it's just luck-based, in my opinion. And you can also start out with 8 iron, 2 big iron deposits or something, and so you have massive amounts of swordsmen and catapults. And there's nothing wrong with games of luck. The whole gambling industry is based on games of luck. But I sort of, in my strategy games, I prefer games where it's somewhat more aimed towards rewarding the skill of the player and not luck of the draw in map generation. With resources, it goes a little bit deeper too. Sirion, I believe. Let me look up something. Going ahead.
Okay. Well, actually, yeah. So basically, you want to give everyone a chance with your starting position. Yes?
Right. Basically, the idea is to provide somewhat of a level playing field with strategic resources. The difference between this is, okay, the guy who did Civ 5 map generation is Bob Thomas. I believe
it's Sirion.
Sirion, right. So he did a really excellent job. I mean, Civilization 5 has a better map generation system than any of the past civilizations. It's much more balanced. Luxury resources are distributed wonderfully. the bonus resource system where it like gives extra food to hilly areas and extra production to grassy areas. That's brilliant. And what I basically did with strategic resources is I took the luxury resource placement system, which places a specific amount for each player in their sort of territory, and I applied that to strategic resources. So the general territory of each player, which is this stuff closer to them than an opponent, gets a specific amount of iron, a specific amount of horses scattered around their territory. And that way, everyone can have about the same amount, and as you conquer more players, you can get more, but it levels out the situation of having tons of resource or not enough at the very start of the game. And there is still some luck involved, because if a city-state is placed over the resource, or an AI gets it before you do, then you will have less or more of that. But overall, I think that taking Sirion's luxury resource system and applying it to strategic resources really helps balance out strategic resource units in this game.
You're, of course, correct that if you only have a narrow tech tree, that if someone starts at 8 iron and someone with 0 iron, that, of course, is leads to imbalance. To offer another option, I'd like to refer to Planetfall. There I designed a tech tree so that no matter how you start, there's always one path you can take, and or some social engineering choices, civics you can take that you can still flourish in your surroundings. Of course, that's not something, I guess, that you can apply to the base game, but perhaps it's something to take in mind for modders, for instance, for your Eden mod, Jacob.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to have in mind. Right. You know, just have a wildly different starting position, but create a tech tree so you can always
Well, I think you're both talking towards about the same thing. Mm-hmm. And it's really nice to have not everybody starts with exactly the same setup and whatnot, but in Civ 4, the major things that you might not have nearby because there's such a limited amount is all late in the tech tree. The rubber, the oil, the uranium, somewhat the aluminum. But they're, you know, the stone, horses, the early game things, there's so much of them that everyone is pretty likely to get all but maybe one of them. So it's not a huge impact. But Thal was saying that, you know, like the rushes early in the game are such a big impact because you might not have the one thing that can give you strength in both offense and defense. And if you lack that, the game is over before you get invested in it. So what's to keep you from just starting up a new game? And if you're always playing the first 50 turns of the game only, it's not that great of a game to play. So yeah, having everything be just completely random, you might not have what you need, is great, but only if you don't need that until later in the game. If it's something that's going to crush you in the early turns, then yeah, it should be not necessarily in your starting city, which is really, really like on how Thal did it, but within the realm of you should be able to get this unless you're slacking off.
Exactly. Yeah. That's also one difference between the system that I implemented and the strategic balance option in game options. What strategic balance does is it forcibly places a certain amount of each resource immediately around your capital. And I agree, that's not very interesting at all because it makes every game the same. You always know you're going to have access to the resources. The system that I use that is based on territory, city-states are not considered. So if you have a 3-iron resource and it's placed in your territory, and then a city-state is later come back and it's placed on top of it, you're not going to have as easy access to that as you normally would, because you'll have to either ally with or conquer the city-state in order to get access to the resources. That can slow down early rushes. And in addition, I also agree that it's useful to take a tech tree approach to these sorts of things. One other change that I made is that early siege units don't require iron. That can be sort of something that some people might disagree with. The reason why I did it is because then everyone has access to at least some basic conquering ability. Even if you have no strategic resources, you could conceivably build archers, spearmen, and some catapults and take cities. It'd be somewhat difficult, but you can do it. And it also means that it's easier to balance horse units with iron units. You can have the same amount of each resource, and the horse units are slightly faster, but also have counters against them, whereas the iron units are slower but have no counters.
Okay.
Does it mean we can build a catapult as many as possible? Isn't it a problem?
You can do that, but since catapults are so weak against horse units or pretty much any fast-moving unit, it makes it difficult. And catapults also in the mod have a 50% damage penalty against land units, which makes them much weaker against land units than, say, archers, which are good against land units.
Okay. That shows I played it a lot.
Gianwulf, you said that you didn't want to complete the different starting positions because of the danger of a rush, but that's exactly the solution I would also take, what Telescus says. Just make sure that all the important units don't require resources. Because, right. You know, if you're assured to have a resource anyway, then you can just, in a way, remove that resource from the game and just make the units require nothing. That's the approach I took in Planetfall. There are no units require a resource. So that way you can still make the starting positions different in other ways. For instance, a big difference if you start on a river or without a river, if you start on the coast, if you start on hills, on forests, there are still ways to make the tech tree focus on those differences.
Right. And at the same time as not wanting the start of the game to be an absolute stomp because you don't have something you need to have, I really like having the start of the game be a time where you can be lacking something that's fairly vital, because then you're left wondering, you know, what can I get? You know, you have something to work towards for later on. And that definitely livens things up a lot more.
Feedback seems to be that's definitely what happens, because each player gets approximately 3 horses and 3 iron that they can access. Some of that might be under a city state, which means they can't get it. Or the AI might place a city on top of the only deposit of that resource, which also means they can't get it. And so feedback seems to be that oftentimes you will get a game where you have only 1 horse or only 1 iron or even none at all. It's relatively rare, but it can still happen. So you do still have some exciting games like that.
So one unit you added to your TBC that doesn't require a resource is the militia. That's I'm a big fan of that. Yeah, I think it's something that's really lacking in a vanilla, something which gives good defense and allows you to explore even beyond the scouts. Yeah. Does anyone have experience with it?
I could go over some basics of it.
Okay, why not? Okay.
Militia are foot soldiers of the early medieval era. Their cost, movement, and strength are identical to pikemen, and they have a slight defense bonus. The primary purpose of militia is for every era to have a resource-free melee foot soldier without any specific bonuses versus other units. Every other era except for the medieval period has a unit like this. The classical period doesn't technically have one, but that era is only one tech wide, and warriors are still seen during then. The reason militia make great foot soldiers is they have the same base strength of pikes, but easy access to some defensive promotions. Militia are useful as city garrisons and good at spotting threats like barbarians to move quickly and intercept them. They're cheaper than pikes, but don't have their bonus versus knights. I feel an important reason to reduce pikemen spam is to make knights more viable. Knights are hopefully more useful when facing opponents with 2 to 3 pikemen instead of a sea of all pikes. Another thing about militia is they have no attack bonuses or offensive promotions available. This means it's necessary for a conqueror to complement militia with units good on the attack. This isn't as important for pikemen because pikes have access to siege promotions and attack terrain promotions, and shifting this emphasis from pikes to militia encourages combined arms more. Another thing in vanilla is that scouts and musketmen are generally considered somewhat underwhelming. Scouts are rather weak, don't upgrade to anything, and musketmen don't upgrade from anything, so it's sort of hard to work them into any sort of unit path. The upgrade path with militia in the middle, it goes scout, militia, musket, sort of fills this void, and especially lets leaders with unique units based on muskets to be a little bit more interesting.
Well, Jacob, are you still here?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, that's okay.
I was just listening about the militia and
continue.
I tend not to do war, so I don't know the militia.
Right. That's something else that is always important for any modder to do, regardless of what sort of mod you're creating, is ensure to look at the perspectives of different playstyles. For example, I'm a conqueror. I've always been a warmonger in all the versions of Civ. But a lot of people also really enjoy building a relatively peaceful empire and going for, say, a culture victory or a science victory. And so I try in my mod to ensure that every possible playstyle is fun to play. I mean, you know, and that every playstyle has a good chance of victory. It might be better or worse in some things than others, but it's important that people aren't penalized just for playing the way that they like to play.
That works really well right now, actually. I play like Xenwolf, actually until the last couple of months. I pretty much always went for science victories, then started playing cultural also with an occasional, diplomatic. I like the idea of like having almost no army, never upgrading or barely upgrading. In other words, doing the minimal amount of fighting and then winning. And then when, Fal revised Germany and made them what they are now, I had so much fun testing it that I've now been in a role of only playing Conquest for like the last, I don't know what, 2 months or something like that. But the thing that I've noticed from doing all this is that you actually can win at all levels at about the same time. And no particular approach is impossible. I mean, other than obviously having a small empire and winning by conquest. So it's really well balanced in that regard.
One thing that I like about research agreements is if they were tied into declarations of friendship somehow, such as if you have a declaration of friendship, it unlocks research agreements, because that would mean that peaceful players can research faster than ones who are at war. And that would also solve the problem of a warmonger having both science and army advantages, because then the peaceful players would have that advantage. The downside is that with our current tools, we're unable to manipulate research agreements in any way. So what I did in the mod is add that effect to declarations of friendship directly, so that when you have a declaration of friendship, it also acts as a research agreement that speeds up your research. And that way, friendly players who keep good relations and good diplomacy can research faster.
Yeah, I like that change. Does anyone miss tech trading from Civ 4?
I was never good at manipulating the tech trades unless on some game I was at the top of the tech level and I remembered, oh yeah, there's this great thing I should do. And every time I got a new tech, I gave it to everybody for whatever they gave me, even if it was just like 50 gold. Those games, I just crush everyone. So I think, yeah, I don't miss it.
That's also why I like tying it in directly to declarations of friendship in some way, because then you can't manipulate it. I mean, if you're getting a certain amount of science each turn from preferably a research agreement that's unlocked from a declaration of friendship, then that you can't exploit.
Whereas, I was thinking, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go.
I was going to say that as, you know, hearing you talk right now about the balancing aspects of the RAs, it's actually an argument for possibly making them even stronger in terms of undercutting conquerors and helping small, tall empires.
It is sort of tricky, though, because if you start out next to a lot of warlike AIs who don't like becoming friends with many people, then that's sort of a bad situation to be in.
Yeah.
Then you become a conqueror yourself.
That is true. I mean, that's one thing that I really like encouraging, is for people to be able to change their strategy depending on circumstances.
Yeah, that's one thing I don't like about the cultural victory. You know, you're in Civ 5, you're more than in Civ 4 forced to decide on your victory type right from the start sometimes. Decent vanilla.
That's one thing I like. One thing I'd like to do, and sort of did in the mod, is I improved the power of late-game cultural buildings while also making cultural victories somewhat more difficult to attain overall. For example, the Opera House in the mod gives a 50% culture boost, and so that improves artists and landmarks, which means that if you need to shift gears sort of midway through the game, you can build opera houses everywhere and then start running artists everywhere, and you can get a big culture boost relatively towards the middle of the game. You don't have to have it planned out from turn one. However, it can also be said that domination games work the same way, because if you don't start conquering by, say, the medieval era, you're probably going to be behind.
I hadn't thought that far yet. So, I don't know, perhaps, again, a mathematical question in a way. In Vanilla C5, only farms can get a higher yield next to rivers. But, in your mod, mines, lumber mills, villages can get that as well. Do you have a reason for that change?
Basically, what I did is I took the same approach as farms, which is you get one bonus next to rivers, and then you get a bonus next to tiles that aren't on rivers, and applied that to the other improvements so that they're all sort of, it's easier to balance that way, because when you have different improvements that are buffed at different times, it can make it very difficult to keep things relatively even. And I think that's one of the main reasons why civil service has often been considered such a powerful technology. Not only does it unlock pikemen, and I believe the Golden Age World Wonder, I don't remember the name of it, Chichen Itza. It also is where the farm unlock is. And another advantage is that by splitting it up into a little bit of a bonus early and a little bit of a bonus late, is that it comes more evenly over time and not all at once.
But I'd like to make an argument in favor of only boosting farms, like in vanilla, perhaps.
Sure.
If you only, first food is a little different than hammers and gold, that you can only, there is a limit to the amount of food that is useful, because you have a happiness limit. And instead of gold and hammers, those are unlimited. The more, the better. So it isn't as bad if you boost that next to rivers. And secondly, if you only boost farms next to rivers, then you, in a way, connect rivers to a specialist strategy by giving a boost to all improvements next to rivers. You, in a way, remove kind of a difference in strategy.
One thing to keep in mind. Yeah, I understand. One thing to keep in mind is that it's not just a river boost, because you get the river boost with farms, and then you get a non-river boost for farms. So it's basically just split up in the tech tree by about one era. And specialists are sort of a tricky deal. That's something Fire Axis removed. Most of the specialist possibilities in the early game, and in Civ 5, a specialist economy isn't really viable until the Renaissance era. That's when you start getting lots of specialist slots. That's when you get the freedom policies. And that is actually something I like to encourage more, is a specialist economy. I sort of liked being able to choose between a tile-based cottage economy or a farm-based specialist economy in Civ 4. It gives, another strategic option. Whereas in Civ 5 Vanilla, you basically only have a tile-based economy. Specialist economy doesn't come around until later on. Would you agree with that, or is your experience different?
Yeah, that's certainly true. It's only, personally, I only find specialist useful if you unlock the, what's it called, the Liberty Tree? Yes, or Freedom, whatever.
Freedom.
I think, yeah. Yeah, before that, it's true. I'm currently playing game of the Ottomans, the Turks with your mods. And actually, I haven't had any use yet of my ability, except for one engineer in my capital. So specialists could be made useful more early in the game. That's true.
One thing to point out, also we mentioned the Germans earlier. The Germans, the Ottomans, and a few other leaders are some of the leaders that I really changed their traits with, because I felt that their traits weren't not as fun in vanilla. I took a poll of people's favorite leaders, and favorite leaders, not just, necessarily overpowered or underpowered. And Germany was ranked at the very bottom. Poor Bismarck had zero votes in his favor out of all the other leaders. And he only ended up getting two by the time the poll ended, which was still dead last. And to try and make Germany more fun, I changed his trait from capturing barbarians when you take a camp and getting a small gold bonus and having it sort of randomized, the vanilla method, and the unit maintenance mod that was recently added. Changed that to he simply, whenever he kills a barbarian, he captures it with half health. And that allows the player to build their strategy more around an early game sort of rush type strategy that he's very good at, more so than the other leaders. And it also leads into his unique unit. There wasn't really much synergy between his trait and unique unit in vanilla. In the mod, barbarians like the Brute can upgrade to Landschnitt in later on. And since Landschnitt have half cost, it also makes that upgrade very inexpensive. And so he can gather together a barbarian army, upgrade them, and then he has, you know, great pikemen that he can run around with. And the result of that is in the second favorite leaders poll that I took, Bismarck is now ranked up pretty highly in the top tier, whereas before he was at the very bottom. So people seem to be enjoying it more.
Yeah, as I said, now I can't stop playing with the guy. I'm playing one more game with him right now, but I'm wondering if perhaps he's actually a bit overpowered, not in that he dominates the games, because I actually don't think Germany is like number one or anything, but it might be too easy, as opposed to OP. Too easy in that you just have an army at the beginning and you're kind of all set. And depending on your skill level, you'll, you know, win at a certain point or another. But I build armies and navies so quickly. Especially if I get a bunch of archers, it's deadly at the beginning.
It's absolutely true that it does make it somewhat easier to build up an army at the start. One thing that I've been considering doing is changing it to like a 50% bonus on each kill to actually get a unit, or possibly changing it back to a 100% bonus for the camp, but still keeping the basic capture mechanic in place instead of the unit maintenance mechanic. One thing that I think is important in designing leaders for any mod, whether it's a balanced mod of vanilla or something totally new, is that the leaders are fun to play and not just good. If a leader had, say, a 30% bonus to all their gold income, that's powerful, but it's not really all that exciting. It doesn't change gameplay in a fundamental, interesting way. And so I try and go for leader traits that are fundamentally interesting and not just a unit maintenance cost reduction, which is not really all that thrilling, I personally feel. And he wasn't, and it isn't voted very highly either in the favorite leader polls. So something I try and keep in mind. That's also an approach I took with the Ottomans, where I decided, hey, no leader really has a specialist focus, so why not give Suleiman a yield bonus for all his specialists so that you can really pump out the specialists? Because in the early game, a merchant or an engineer can provide higher yields than regular tile improvements, and so it makes it really viable.
Yeah, and then there's America as well, that you also really help jack it up in the polls, largely via the Pioneer Fort, I think. But regardless, they've really jumped up in the ports in the polls. So I was thinking that the leaders are probably the best example of how you've made the mod more fun and the game more fun. But it's also balanced really well in that, for example, like there's a lot less discussion on our forums about the best way to start and the no-brainer openings. Those have been balanced out really well by you in the mod, I think, so that you don't have the great library or a certain, say like Babylon opening that everybody always does. And that has to be my last thought, because this actually started a little later than I thought and ran a little longer than I thought. So I have somewhere that I have to go.
Yeah, sure.
Thanks, Maniac, for having me aboard and meeting Zian Wolf at Opera. And Fal, again, thank you very, very much for all the effort that you put into this mod. As you know, I really, really enjoy it.
It's fun to do.
Great.
Yeah. Thanks for coming out. Cheers.
Sure. Take care.
What he was talking about with having the game both fun and the different leaders interesting ties back into what I said earlier about Blizzard says everything, when you're working on something in the game, ask yourself, is it fun? This applies to absolutely any mod you do. You want to make sure that the game is fun to play. It's a game. You know, it's entertainment. It's supposed to be exciting and interesting and fun to play. And so you want to make sure that things that you create are exciting and that people like doing it. And then it also is that you want to have interesting decisions so that, you know, like, do I want to play this leader or that leader or this faction or, you know, what social engineering to get in an Alpha Centauri mod? You want to make sure that the choices are interesting and the strategies aren't all unified so that there isn't just one strategy everyone uses to open the game with. There's multiple interesting strategies and different ways to start the game.
And definitely it does. Good philosophy to have for it.
Quite agree.
Something else I was thinking about is for next time, something we could talk about is more about modding tips, since that's something we didn't really go into this time. We could talk about the basics of modding Civilization 4 and Civilization 5 and, you know, stuff that would probably be more in Xenewolf's area of expertise for Civ 4.
Yeah, and, well, we talked a little bit about game design, so we still sort of hit along that
absolutely
line.
Absolutely true.
Yeah, for instance, I don't even know a basic thing like can you view a game in Civ 5? You know, like in Civ 4 with the world builder, can you make the entire map visible and edit stuff? I don't even know if that is possible in Civ 5.
Yeah, you can.
In Civ 4, there was world builder mode you entered into. In Civ 5, there's Fire Tuner, which you open up on the side of Civ, and it makes it to where you can get extra commands you can do.
So that Fire Tuner only works if Civ 5 itself is already working, running.
There's actually two tools. One of them is the World Builder, which is a standalone map and scenario editor, which opens up separately from main Civilization. And then there's Fire Tuner, which is when you have a game running, you can use Fire Tuner to add units to the map and stuff. That's usually mostly useful for testing purposes.
Okay. With those wise words, we will end the modcast. Yes?
Sure.
Sounds good.
Okay, thanks for coming. See you another time, Opera.
Yeah, thank you for receiving me, and it was a bit intimidating for me.
Yeah, sorry we didn't break you all the way out of your shell. But we got to talk a little bit.
Well, maybe I will come another time.
Darn, I'm not used to this.
It's okay.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659. That's 301-637-POLY. In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY. You can Skype us at ThePolycast or email us at thepolycast@gmail.com. For more information on Modcast, our sibling shows, Polycast, Revcast, and Turncast, or about Polycast in general, log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net. Civilization IV, Warlords Beyond the Sword, which we don't have our copyright take to anymore. Unfortunately, okay. That one I hadn't read ahead of time, so I was like, oh, this is pointless.